Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Diana Dini.
And this is Mojan Sohib. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Mojan. Hey, I've been finding more interesting articles being written by other people on LinkedIn. I don't know if I changed some of my network settings or the people that I'm following are starting to get more into publishing things, but I saw one that I wanted to talk with you about today and get your input on. And it's about decision room carrying, that there's a problem when a decision is made in one room and it's expected to be carried over into another one. And the article was describing all these sorts of tools and techniques for capturing how decisions are made in companies, and that there's JIRA, there's RACI diagrams, of course there's quality management systems and that kind of thing. But all these tools are captured to describe how decisions get made on a particular project or in a company or in a team. And the decisions are getting made, but then it's not necessarily the people that have to carry out those decisions who are in the room when the decision was being made. It's sort of like they weren't in the room when it happened. They were just either, it was done in a way where they just kind of had to, you know, nod their head, yes. Really wasn't a format where they could give their feedback, or they were, you know, sort of delegated to them. Hey, we decided to do this. Go ahead and implement that. And they did some studies. This is specifically with AI, that executives wanted to implement more AI in the decision-making process. Not necessarily to have AI make the decisions, but just involve it in analyzing information. And so the decision was made up front, and then the next level, I suppose you could say, the managers were a little less enthusiastic about it. And then when you have the doers, the ones that had to actually implement it, they reverted back to doing things by hand or doing it the old way and not really adopting the new tools. So seemed to be a pervasive problem in this one study that she referenced. So I know that this happens. Some of the things that I've seen happen with it is just things don't get implemented the way you think you should, or there's no buy-in. I wanted to ask you about this topic. Have you seen this too? How pervasive do you think it is? And if you've ever had a RACI diagram or worked for a company that had one of those, was it helpful in actually executing, or was there that decision room carry problem?
Oh man,
did I just?
Maybe I love this.
Maybe I.
How much time do
too
we have?
Much.
No, I'm kidding. No. I don't think so. I think it's a topic that's very close to heart for me, I guess, shall we say, and also it's a very meaty topic, right? Like, yeah. It's so important, and it does happen a lot. Actually, I mean, I've worked in, let's say medium to large size companies, where you could have, like, you know, the engineering organization, for example, can be maybe 1,000 people or more. And so you do rely on, you know, it's not like a 5-person team where you can, you know, pass on, like, communication is just so fluid and, you know, everyone's generally pretty aware of what's going on, and, you know, they talk together a lot and such. So you do need communication flow on, especially on decisions in larger organizations, especially for the engineers that end up usually being or operators or whoever it is, right? That end up being the doers, like you said in your example. That communication flow needs to be really fluid. And a lot of times it's not. I've definitely seen it, that it hasn't been. I have been involved, to answer your question, in RACI diagrams. I've drafted them myself. I've created them many times. Although I really don't like them. I feel like they miss a lot of information. And then I've made like swim lanes a lot, and you know, that so swim lanes that would be kind of like a combination of like, you know, RACIX and like handoffs, if you will. Like, you know, I think that's one of the things that RACIX misses, is that there's no like the criteria for agreement, you know, of like, or a handoff, for example, between different teams is not necessarily very clear. I would say it happens a lot, and you know, I've certainly seen the struggle of when it doesn't work very well, what sort of things can happen.
So I know some of these tools, like the RACI diagram and the swim lane, I know exactly what you mean, because I've done them too. And I think looking back on it, when I did it, the roles and responsibilities weren't really clearly defined. And so I think I was trying to create a RACI diagram to figure out how to get stuff done for my project, because you're part of a project and you're given certain tasks. And so you're trying to figure out how to navigate the team. I've since learned that those RACI diagrams are best if it's the team that's creating them, so that it's really the takeaway. The RACI chart itself is really just the takeaway of the more important team process and creating it, and having everybody involved and how the decisions get made or how it's going to work is more meaningful than just sharing out a chart for who's supposed to do what. So I have learned that since then, and it does work out much better. But it's curious that, you know, a lot of these things that you think once you get it on paper and you visualize it, and you can see how handoffs are made and stuff like that, that it makes it smoother. But it doesn't. It doesn't make the handoffs smoother.
No, it does not. Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, and I think a lot of times it's understandable. You know, sometimes it results in like, oh, this team can't, you know, necessarily kick off something without the approval of another team, but then how that happens maybe hasn't been exactly defined, or maybe when it needs to happen by, like, hasn't been defined, kind of thing. And I think to your point, you know, if the team is already has a process in place and it's working well, it's just a matter of just write down how it's already going, and maybe it needs some refinement. But you know, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. Whatever the expression is. Have you seen? I'm curious, when you were talking about the example too, and just in other situations that you've seen, what tools do you find that do work well? Like, is it, or maybe put another way, like, what have you seen is the biggest bottleneck? Is it, or maybe where the chain breaks? Like, is it just that, you know, the decision is made in one room and it's just not communicated or broadcast, for example, to the other groups and to the doers? Is it that it's not very well defined? And then, so when it's broadcast, the team is like, I don't know what that means. I'm just going to keep doing what I was doing. What are the challenges and what tools work the best?
I think it's the problems mostly arise when people aren't part of the decision. And I know that in some teams, you know, this person decides this, right? But if the rest of the team didn't have input or got to bring up some of their concerns and problems, or get to present some of the options that would benefit their group. I'm specifically thinking of, you know, like design for manufacturing. If they don't get to participate in the decision-making process, I think that's where a lot of the problems come into play. And I was just, I was talking with Jenny Wagner, and she brought up something which I also thought was really interesting, is that a lot of these projects are treated like a manufacturing thing where people want it to be fast and efficient. And if there's a lot of focus on timeline and being fast and efficient and making decisions quickly and keeping things moving, that's where the teams start avoiding those conversations, because it's not that they're messy conversations. There's a little bit of conflict, but it's not like, it's not the kind of conflict that you want to avoid. It's the kind of conflict that you welcome, because at the end of it, you're going to come out with something better, that fits better to what you're trying to do. So I think for the sake of efficiency, people skip working with others and in coming up and deciding. And I think that's where we run into a lot of problems like this, with this decision room carry problem.
So it's, yeah, so trying to move quickly basically results in, let's just get it done, which means like that not all the conversations happen. Because maybe there's a perception that with the conversations, if they do happen, like it's just going to be slower and maybe things won't move as quickly. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Things won't move as quickly. It'll introduce problems. Whereas if you don't have the conversations and have a way to work with people to defining some of these things, then it relates to the, you know, people have this decision. Okay, well, I guess we're doing it this way. And there's not a lot of heart put into it because they weren't part of the decision. Their voice wasn't heard when the decision was being made.
And then do you feel like, I mean, I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second. So let's say there are many, people within the doers group from different teams, basically. And a given, RASIC chart, for example, or swim lane chart would impact several teams. I mean, they usually do, at least in my experience. And I think I've probably been guilty of what you just said, actually, is like of deciding for the sake of efficiency that, like, oh, we're just going to like do it this way and, you know, and we're going to move on. And probably it probably resulted in exactly what you're describing. So I'm wondering, you know, if I were to play devil's advocate, if I were to involve the doers and the teams that would be impacted by this, you know, that could easily turn into a 25-person, you know, meeting or workshop or something like that. And it certainly can't operate like the United Nations, where it's like everybody has to unanimously vote for something.
Yeah,
like that's not going to work. So what have you seen work well in these types of scenarios? And, for being able to not maybe for people like me who do tend to want to move things quickly, to utilize in a situation like that, to be able to kind of get the buy-in from the teams that are impacted, from the people that would actually be doing the work, but not feel like they, you know, we might be stuck in an endless meeting and not necessarily get to an agreement.
Yeah, good question. And I've done it too. And I almost think there's some points where you just have to make a decision to move on. Mm-hmm. But like we triage things for reliability engineering, this might need some triage, where there's certain decisions that could have a heavy impact on other people, or that are going to heavily rely on other people in order to get it done, or for that particular group. Then you can make it intentional to talk with them about that decision and to get their input. So it wouldn't mean let's all have a meeting and let's, everybody nods their heads and then leaves. because then the next week you come in on, you know, on Monday morning, it's like the decision wasn't even made, or, you know, were we just nodding so that we can just avoid having a disagreement. So it's being intentional about the particular problem in question that you're trying to solve with your decision. And if it's product design, or, you know, we were just talking previously about customers, and reliability is about the customers. So linking back that decision to the customers and how it will get done. And it doesn't have to take a 30-minute meeting. Maybe it's a 15-minute touch point where we have this important decision. Group A, you're going to be responsible for implementing a lot of this. What concerns do you have about it? And group B, you're going to have to take it and implement it in manufacturing. What are some of the pitfalls that you see? So whereas you're not really ceding your decision-making authority, if you're the project manager, if you're the design lead, maybe you're not ceding your decision-making authority. You're still making a decision, but you're actively asking the other groups for their input, and they become part of the decision that gets made. And so they become, it's easier for them to adopt a decision and do the work toward it because they were part of it. They were in the room.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I like that Fred always says is, you know, I think we even had an episode on this, was what's in it for them is what we titled it. And so what he says is, you know, always is like, if you show the value also of what you're doing to that is relevant to them, you know, how is it going to help them, for example, and that also helps them get on board with what you're trying to do. And I think maybe that may apply here as well.
I think it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not just, they are obviously for them to feel part of the decision making is very helpful. And hopefully the value of how it will help them also in their, you know, day to day or, you know, general workflow, how it's also going to make their lives easier. Hopefully, ideally, it should be. Yeah.
You know, and part of it is reducing the assumptions that we're making when making a decision. And so that reduces some of the communication problems. So if you're an experienced engineer and you have a decision to make and you think you understand all the ins and outs and everything, that's fine, but it's still worth it to ask, because there might be something hidden, or what you thought was stable really wasn't stable and could really be a problem. So it'll help surface some of those underlying assumptions, and they won't be assumptions anymore. They'll actually be something that you discuss and get out in the open. So it reduces a lot of risks in decision-making too.
Yes, 100%. It just reminded me, I've worked in many examples, many projects, usually in failure analysis, where someone thought that they understood, you know, someone very experienced, you know, thought that they heard the problem statement basically. And they were like, oh yeah, I've seen this before. It's this thing. And, you know, and then every other decision that's made after that is based on that statement, you know, like what's the fix, or this is like corrective action, you know, what do we do next? When, you know, when is it a problem? Is it, is it going to be soon, et cetera? All of that is made based on that. And then it turns out, you know, someone else comes along, takes a closer look at it, and then they find more data. They find more information that, you know, unravels basically other things that were also contributing to the problem, or maybe even that the root cause was completely different from what they thought. Just because, you know, maybe some of the symptoms were similar. And so it has huge consequences when assumptions are made like that. And to your point, even when someone is super experienced, If they have conversations and don't necessarily make the assumptions, it can be hugely beneficial.
That's a really good point. Because when you are doing that root cause, and somebody does say, hey, I've seen this before, it might very well be that. But then the team can sort of bring it back to the classic problem solving, right? Or really what's wrong with what? That's what happened 2 years ago. Is it the same thing? And you can question it and investigate it without being confrontational about it, because you're just having a discussion to surface assumptions and make a decision.
Yes, exactly.
Very helpful. Not easy. It's easier to just decide something. but then sometimes, you know, like I mentioned the triage, sometimes doing that introduces a lot more rework and headache and drag on the project than you originally intended.
Yes, definitely. I've seen this happen a lot, you know, that just like the failure analysis examples, like, yeah, it results in, because if you don't figure out the root cause, the problem will come back again and then again. And then, you know, it could be like the third time or something by the time someone is like, wait a minute, like what's going on here? I thought we fixed this.
Well, if anyone listening has any stories about that decision room carryover problem where your team made a decision on Friday and on Monday it didn't seem like the decision was made. You didn't get buy-in on your decision. Has that happened to you? And how did you handle it? Would you have any other questions for the listeners?
No. Yeah. I would love to hear about what things, you know, our listeners have seen work well and what things maybe they haven't, and any lessons learned.
Yeah. Well, if you can leave us feedback, visit ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There are forms. You could leave us a voicemail. Everyone on the Ascendo Reliability team gets your messages and reviews them. And you never know, your question might become a future episode. And if you do leave a question or comment, somebody will respond to you. I don't know. We're recording this on a Friday, Majan, and no decisions got made on my projects today, so I'm not going to have any Monday morning surprises.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't know if there were any for me. I did have a surprise. Something that I was told is one way, it totally changed and is now is you know, we realize it's very different. So I think Monday for me is going to be, okay, what do I do now based on this information? It'll be an adventure.
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure as always, Majan. Thanks for chatting.
Yeah, likewise, Diana. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.